Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Front Lines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Wow, is this the nation we agreed to put our lives on the line to defend? The Department of Justice investigation into the pro-abortion attacks on churches and pregnancy resource centers accelerated this month from motionless to glacial. Nearly 9 months after the Dobbs opinion leak on May 2, 2022, which triggered a wave of pro-abortion violence, the DOJ finally announced the first two grand jury indictments against Caleb Freestone and Amber Smith Stewart. The indictment alleges that these individuals, quote, targeted pregnancy resource facilities and vandalized those facilities with spray-painted threats, end quote. These attacks are among more than 100 incidents of pro-abortion violence targeting churches and pregnancy resource centers that have been cataloged since the Dobbs opinion was leaked. There were three attacks against Catholic-affiliated pregnancy resource centers where the vandals were captured on security tape, but not by the police. We got to do better now. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. Seen any big balloons on the sky, Skip?
No, Colonel, but I am watching. In fact, I just got off the gun range, spent like half a day there, you know, training the next generation of civilian warriors. And it was great. There was like three quarters of the class were men in their 20s. That's real unusual, but boy, we had a great time, and I did look up at the sky a few times just to make sure.
Well, we got to keep checking, and boy, am I glad you're getting more people getting trained. Armed is important, but trained is more important. Here's what we have for you today. On News and Comments by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss how our government is violating our Constitution. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Then we'll talk with Colonel John Berry, who runs Berry Law, on helping vets. Next, retired Major General Paul Valley will discuss our nation's military COVID crisis, and General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or on Facebook. Now it's time for News and Comments by the Colonel on Front Lines of Freedom. We always start with the news, so take us there, Skip.
Well, Colonel, within hours of an Air Force F-22 downing a giant Chinese balloon that had crossed our country, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin reached out to his Chinese counterpart via a special crisis line, aiming for a quick general-to-general talk that could explain things and ease tensions. But Austin's effort that Saturday fell flat when Chinese Defense Minister Wang Feng declined to get on the line, the Pentagon says. China's defense ministry says it refused the call from Austin after the balloon was shot down because the U.S. had, quote, not created the proper atmosphere, unquote, for dialogue and exchange. The U.S. action had seriously violated international norms and set a pernicious precedent, a ministry spokesperson was quoted as saying in a statement.
I'm just wondering why this call wasn't made as soon as we became aware their balloon was approaching our airspace. Why would we wait until we not only had our nation's airspace penetrated for several days, and we had finally shot down the balloon? Had the four-star general responsible for our nation's air defense said he didn't see it as a threat? Do we have any senior military people with any confidence? We certainly look like fools to our friends and to our enemies. Oh, and Skip, there was another one that we just shot down a couple of days ago, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was. And, you know, hopefully we created a better atmosphere, you know, no pun intended, Colonel.
You're forgiven.
Chinese firms with ties to the Chinese Communist Party have in recent years purchased American military academies that operate military officer training programs. In 2015, a member of the Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference, which serves as the Chinese Communist Party's political advisory board, purchased Donald Trump's alma mater, the New York Military Academy, for $16 million after a bidding war with another Chinese conglomerate. 2 years later, a Chinese education conglomerate purchased a Florida preparatory academy as part of its plan to create a global educational alliance system. The organization partnered with a CCP-controlled regional government agency on the initiative. Both the New York Military Academy and Florida Preparatory Academy operate Junior Reserve Officers Training Corps programs, which train potential future military members. Representative Michael Waltz, Republican from Florida, a member of the House Armed Services Committee, says Chinese ownership of these schools could pose a national security threat. Waltz sent a letter to Defense Secretary Austin urging the Pentagon to survey junior ROTC programs at private schools across the country to see if they are foreign-owned.
Isn't it clear to all by now that the Chinese are doing all they can to infiltrate and control and ultimately destroy our nation? All businesses and other agencies related to the Chinese government needed to be banned from any activity in our nation. Why isn't our government taking action?
Colonel, it's really frustrating me. It's almost like we're cooperating, going out of our way to let them do whatever damage they can do. It's really frustrating.
It is.
And Iran and Russia have reportedly agreed to establish a joint drone manufacturing facility in Russia. This comes after the U.S. and European nations have imposed sanctions on Iranian-made drones going to Russia. The Shahed 136 drones, which have been responsible for a series of attacks on Ukraine's energy infrastructure, only cost around $20,000 to produce. The establishment of a drone factory in Russia is expected to result in the construction of an additional 6,000 drones ready for deployment by Russian forces in Ukraine. According to the Wall Street Journal, the agreement to set up manufacturing operations was signed with Iran back in November. The new factory could result in the production of more effective UAVs as the two nations aim to build a faster drone that could pose new challenges for Ukrainian air defenses. The move is also an attempt to sidestep our efforts to choke off Iran's ability to manufacture the drones, as our forces help the Ukrainian military target drone launch sites. Ukrainian forces have regularly announced that their anti-air defenses have intercepted inbound Iranian drones, but these anti-air systems are many times more expensive than the drones themselves.
So the two most military hostile nations in the world, Iran and Russia, are now partnering to destroy Ukraine. And then, who knows who's next? Who knows what their next target will be? While our nation's leadership gets weaker, they're partnering up to get stronger. Ouch.
The number of medical events that triggered official reporting requirements among U.S. military pilots rose over 1,700% from 2019 to 2022, an increase the Pentagon says was the result of COVID-19. Last month, an Army flight surgeon and prominent opponent of our military's now-defunct COVID-19 vaccine mandate posted data on Twitter showing that the number of reportable medical events among military aviators rose from an average 226 a year between 2016 and 2019 to 4,059 in 2022, according to the Defense Medical Epidemiology Database. The flight surgeon, Lieutenant Colonel Teresa Long, filed for whistleblower protection and testified against the vaccine mandate, alleging that the vaccine carries risk of severe side effects, more than the illness itself. Long said she searched the database for all reportable events involving military pilots following the Federal Aviation Administration's announcement in October. It was easing some requirements for airline pilots regarding their cardiac health. She, along with the other opponents of mRNA vaccines, asserts that the FFA policy change was related to an increased number of patients with heart damage caused by the vaccines. Government studies show, however, that the risks associated with COVID-19 vaccines are low. Rare side effects may include heart inflammation and short increases, less than a day in a woman's menstrual cycle, but with nearly 670 million doses given in the U.S. since December 2020, adverse events have remained low, even as 1.1 million Americans have died of the coronavirus. The Defense Department said that the increase in reportable adverse events among military pilots is a result of COVID-19 itself, not the vaccines.
Virtually all of the U.S. government-funded medical groups totally support the COVID shots. This despite the fact that all the other evidence supports Colonel Long's data and says she's correct. Our current government will never admit a major mistake, regardless of how many lives it costs. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing. We can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a veteran, in getting involved and getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check cv4a.org. That's cv4a.org. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Front Lines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel, and we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. Then we'll talk with Colonel John Barry, from Barry Law. At ease, troops, take a break.
This is Lieutenant Colonel retired John Barry, managing partner of Barry Law. For over 50 years, Barry Law has defended the rights of Americans, both on the battlefield and in the courtroom. We are committed to supporting our fellow service members. If you need help appealing your VA disability decision, find us at PTSDlawyers.com or call 888-883-2483.
This is Marine Vet Skip Correa with your Home Defense Tip of the Week. A man in Florida thought it was a good idea to show his pistol to a friend while inside his church. He fired the gun without intending to, and both he and his wife were taken to the hospital with wounds to the hand and the stomach. Sometimes people think carrying a gun is a cool novelty, but guard against this temptation. Only draw your firearm when you need to for self-defense. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit HomeDefenseShow.com.
Fellow Americans, we need your help. PatriotFoods.com. We are fighting for the American farmer. U.S. only fruits and vegetables from your soil. Go to PatriotFoods.com. Use your promo code FREEDOM and you get 10% off today. Support your U.S. farmer. Promo code FREEDOM, 10% off. Thank you so much.
It's great food. I eat it. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. PatriotFoods.com. Promo code FREEDOM. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you're in formation and listening to the front lines of freedom all across America. Troops, did you know American farmers are going out of business because folks are buying foreign food? It's not good for our nation's security if we can't feed ourselves. We need to maintain our food independence by buying food grown in America. Patriot Foods is not emergency food. It's food produced by our farmers. I love it. Use the promo code FREEDOM and save 10%. Check PatriotFoods.com. That's PatriotFoods.com. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. We veterans took an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. Our Constitution is a legal document, right? Not some dream list or something? Well, so it says what it says, and it doesn't say what it doesn't say. Well, we need to ensure that our elected officials know what the Constitution says and then follow it. Among the lesser-known holes in the Constitution cut by the Patriot Act of 2001 was the destruction of the wall between federal law enforcement and federal spies. The wall was elected by the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act of 1978, which statutorily limited all federal domestic spying to that which was authorized by the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. This was to prevent law enforcement from accessing and using data gathered by our domestic spying agencies. Those who monitor our government's destruction of personal liberties have been warning that the government's spying is rampant and the feds regularly engage in violation of the Fourth Amendment. And the Fourth Amendment says, quote, the right of people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized, end quote. And our FBI does admit that this may be being violated. Here's the backstory. After President Nixon resigned, Congress investigated his abuse of the FBI and CIA as domestic spying agencies. Some of the spying was on political dissenters, some on political opponents. None of it lawful. So what's lawful spying? The Supreme Court has made it clear that domestic spying is a search, and the acquisition of data from a search is a seizure within the meaning of the Fourth Amendment. That requires a warrant issued by a judge based on probable cause of crime presented under oath to the judge for a search and seizure to be lawful. It also requires that search warrants specifically describe the place to be searched and the person or thing to be seized. The language in the Fourth Amendment is among the most precise in the Constitution because of the colonial disgust with the British general warrants. General warrants didn't require probable cause, only governmental needs. Further, they didn't specify what was to be searched or seized. Rather, they authorized government agents to search where they wanted to and seize what they found. They could engage in fishing expeditions. When Congress learned of Nixon's excesses, it enacted FISA, which required that all domestic spying be authorized by a new and secret FISA court. Congress then lowered the probable cause standards for FISA court to probably being a foreign agent, and it permitted the FISA court to issue general warrants. How can Congress, a creature of the Constitution, change the standards established by the Constitution? Answer, it can't, but it did. And this isn't the first time the Constitution has been ignored or abused or manipulated. Another recent example of abuse is how we've treated the peaceful protesters who participated in the protest at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, just over 2 years ago. Many of them are still in jail with no contact with families or any support, not even being charged. They've been thrown to the wolves. The Sixth Amendment says, and I quote, "In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense," end quote. How about Marine combat vet Jesus Rivera? He and his fellow prisoners are still in jail, specifically the very rough jail in D.C. They couldn't celebrate Christmas last year with their families or friends. They weren't allowed to go to midnight mass or sing Christmas hymns on Sunday morning at church. If they celebrated, they did it as political prisoners who prayed and sang while hoping they wouldn't be punished. Hey, they're being railroaded just for exercising their constitutionally protected rights that day at the Capitol building. Jesus Rivera didn't even protest. He just shot videos on his phone and on digital camera for a local news station at home in Florida. He entered the Capitol peacefully like many other patriots that day. You know, many of the doors to the Capitol were opened by the police. It was no break-in. But Jesus had been sentenced to 8 months in federal prison anyway. Disabled Marine vet Zach Rell protested peacefully, but he's been held without bail and the VA cut off his disability payments. Other January 6th peaceful protesters have been driven to such desperation that over 30 of them have begged to get transferred to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Many of these jailed patriots haven't even seen their families in a year or more. Some, like prisoner Peter Stagger, has been jailed for over 600 days. This in the United States of America? This isn't the nation I fought to protect and defend, and it's definitely not a nation following our Constitution. This is the time for us to be in regular contact with our Congress critters and U.S. senators and to demand the government follow the Constitution. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. And now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have to share this week, Roland?
You know, the United States is coming up on 50 years as an all-volunteer force. But it's also having a very difficult time finding enough qualified volunteers to fill their ranks. Multiple experts have said that diversity must be a top-line requirement. Now, to put a finer point on it, demographic data on the U.S. population shows that women are surpassing men in education, and men's participation in the workforce is dropping. So the military is going to need to rely more on women. You know, a lot of the skills that the military is going to need in the future are available in the female population. Also, the difficulties that the military is facing with the young male population, such as drug use and criminal records, is not as big of a problem in the female population. Now, for the officer corps, a college education is still going to be a requirement, and women are now more likely to be college educated than men. One-third of the 25 to 29-year-old men hold bachelor's degrees, compared to 44% of women in the same age group. Furthermore, over the past 30 years, men's participation in the workforce has been on the decline. Now, one of the factors is that one out of every seven men in the U.S. have a felony conviction. And those with felony convictions have a very difficult time getting employment and are completely disqualified from military service. In the past 5 years, women have been able to serve in any occupational specialty in the military. However, they still make up less than 20% of the entire U.S. military. And retention of women in the service continues to be an issue as they try to balance service with motherhood and oftentimes the career of a spouse who is also serving. You know, the military has a long way to go in changing the culture where they saw women as less than capable of men. Yes, there's still going to be certain jobs where physical strength is going to matter, and those roles will continue to be dominated by men. But the services need to continue working to change the culture where women are really looked at as equals. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief War Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. I really enjoy your comments. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll talk with Colonel John Barry from Barry Law. Then General Paul Valley will discuss our military's COVID crisis. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You're standing tall with the Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for sit-ups. Start with 50, take a break and do another 50, then stand at ease. Troops, America has gotten more dangerous. If you're like me, you'll defend yourself and your family with a firearm if necessary. As right as this is, if it happens, experts recommend not talking to police without an attorney present. That's why I'm a member of U.S. Law Shield. They are the very best self-defense insurance that I've found. They provide unlimited attorney coverage as needed at a very reasonable price. Check uslawshield.com, uslawshield.com, and use the code FRONTLINES. That's one word, FRONTLINES. You'll be glad you did.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care.
We are leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted.
Our key to success?
You. We bring your voice to leaders calling the shots so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity.
Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
Troops, welcome back to the nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. To honor to welcome back to the show, retired Army Lieutenant Colonel John Barry. John served in combat, then as an attorney, he began supporting veterans, particularly those suffering from PTSD. He's a man I'm proud to call friend. Welcome, John. Glad you could join us.
Thanks so much for having Denny, and thanks so much for your continued service to our veterans.
John, I want you to start by sharing the story of your time in the Army, and I'm guessing you were following in your dad's footsteps. He, sure, like me, was a Vietnam vet, and what a heck of a good role model. Take it from there, will you?
Sure. So my father also started off as an infantry officer, then became a JAG officer in Vietnam, and of course he wrote a book about his defense of the 5th Special Forces and murder charges in Vietnam. He wrote a book called Those Gallant Men on Trial in Vietnam. I went to the College of William & Mary, had a very short football career, had some injuries, and decided that what I wanted to do was become an airborne ranger. So I became an infantry officer, went through airborne school, ranger school. My first assignment was as a platoon leader in Fort Hood, Texas, 1st Cavalry Division. My first deployment was to Bosnia in 99. I came back. And I was there right when we started bombing Kosovo. So everything is starting to blow up. And then I come back and I thought, wow, that's it. Like, well, I thought something was going to happen. And we were in the Clinton era, peacekeeping missions. And I decided that now was the time to go to law school. So I went to law school. And while I was in law school, the guard agreed to pay my tuition. There's a federal tuition assistance program. And so I stayed in, I got a company command, and after practicing law for about a year, I realized I couldn't do both. So I went to my commander and said, look, I've fulfilled my obligation. I really can't keep doing both. And he said, John, don't worry. You don't have to do both. In fact, you're taking your company to Iraq. So this was in 2004 when I heard about it. By 2005, we were in Iraq. I was a company commander there. For a year, we were in Al-Asad, the Marine base out in Western Iraq. Came back and I was going to get out again. And I got this job as being the company commander for the officer candidate school, which was also a phenomenal job. And later I became the battalion commander for the officer and warrant officer candidate school and retired with 20 years and as a lieutenant colonel. So I got the benefit of not only having active duty, but then being a lawyer and a guardsman, where I had to learn how to lead a full-time staff and a team when I couldn't be there. And so this really helped me develop Barry Law, my father's law firm. We've grown quite a bit. We're almost the size of an infantry company now. We've got about 115 team members. We've got team members in different states. And it's much like I learned on active duty and then later in the Guard and Reserves, you know, you want to be on boots on the ground as much as you can, but you can't always be there. But so when you're there, you need to make sure that it counts and that you're giving a clear, concise message to your team, that you're always setting the standards with your actions. Because when you're there every day, it's easy to watch others. But when you can't be there every day, it's really important that your team can watch you and learn from your leadership by example.
Yes, sir. I could not agree more. One of the things that I learned as both platoon leader and as a company commander and saw it reinforced was I saw good leaders and not so good leaders and a few bad leaders. And I learned what the good leaders were doing and how to avoid what the bad leaders were doing. And certainly the silliest of all the things is the guy who, I'm the leader, I'm the one who knows everything. Nobody makes any decisions but me. And I've seen people fall apart, and it's a hard way to lead. You've got really good people. Let them run things, advise you. You're still in charge. Develop your leaders. Constantly develop your people. That's the easy and fun and effective way, in my opinion. Does that work for you?
I think you have to invest quite a bit in your people and your team. One disservice that I think the military did for us, I remember this. I was a lieutenant and I had some non-performers on my team. I don't know. In the military, we called them dirtbags. I don't know what you do. They were dragging the team down. And I remember having a conversation with this sergeant major at the firing range. And I said, you know, there are non-performers that we can't fix. And he said, Lieutenant, do you mean to tell me that these soldiers who got a high enough score on the ASVAB, who are mentally sound, who are physically fit enough, and who made the commitment, can't do the job? And I said, that's exactly what I'm telling you, Sergeant Major. He said, Lieutenant, if they can't do the job, that's because you as a leader failed. And for me, I thought about that and I thought, well, yeah, that makes sense. Now in the civilian world, right, it's not always true. You can run a business, you can run an organization, and you know, if you don't have top performers and they can't become top performers or even meet the standard, you can let them go. It's not like you failed. Someone may have failed them. Their parents may have failed them. Their educators may have failed them. Their last boss may have failed them. But you can't fix everybody. And in the military, you got your team. They're qualified. They meet the standard. And you as a leader must ensure that they're taken care of, but also that they advance. And in the civilian world, you don't have as much control, and therefore you can't get there. I mean, you know, in the military, let's face it, the government owns you 24/7.
Yes.
And if you have somebody who's not performing, you can work with them 24/7, do some corrective training, as we used to call it, to get them there. But you can't do that in the civilian world. That's illegal. So I think it is much different. You know, you develop a different mindset about developing leaders. The good news is that if you can't develop them, you're not stuck with them. And in the military, one of the disservices we did too is if you didn't have a good performer, Denny, you could usually ship them to another unit, right? You remember those days?
Yes, I do. And sometimes you could get away with it and sometimes you couldn't.
Yeah. And if you didn't want to do it too much, because if you developed that reputation, people knew. And so, yes. But there was a lot of that I saw. If someone was coming from a different platoon or company, you knew. It was probably not going to be their stars.
Yep. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontline to Freedom. We're talking leadership with Colonel John Barry from Barry Law. John, when I look at people in charge, I see a spectrum. On the one extreme end is the leader. The other extreme end is the manager. Managers will always do things right. If there's supposed to be two green ones and a blue one, there'll always be two. But leaders do the right thing. So the extreme manager is risk adverse. He just wants everything right. The extreme leader makes decisions and takes risk. Most of us live in the middle on the spectrum where we have some leadership and some management skills. But we have to recognize where people are on that spectrum. And somebody who is a really strong leader, we need to put them in a position where they can use that. Somebody who's a really strong manager, we don't want them running things. We want them making leaders work. We need to take the skills we find in these people and put them somewhere where they can be successful. And that's worked every time I figured it out in time to do it right.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, you have to put people in positions where they can be successful. As a leader, we have to make sure our team can be successful. And I suppose if someone asked me, well, what makes a leader? My simplest answer is results. Leaders get results. Now, there's the Army definition of leadership, which, if my recollection serves me correctly, at last edit, it was the art and science of directing and inspiring others to complete a mission, right? It used to be the art of influencing others to complete a mission, but I think they determined there's also a science to it, and understanding people's capabilities and making sure that they can become successful. But leadership is a burden, just like command was a burden, but it's one that leaders accept, understanding that they must take risks for their teams to be successful. And I wholeheartedly agree. The manager is risk averse. The leader takes calculated risks.
And as I said, most of us have a little bit of each of us, and that's well. There's more to discuss about leadership, and John is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, thanks for joining us for push-up time. Now I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, well, some days. Then take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
HealthVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with all of your everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, health-related services, or information on retirement planning, financial resources, or more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all of your daily needs at HealthVet.net. HealthVet.net wants to thank you for your service, and may God continue to bless the U.S. of A.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Colonel John Barry from Barry Law on leadership. John, one of the things that sort of got us together on this is that you were writing a book. I think it's about Dunn on leadership. And that's really a wildly important topic in what we're talking about. I believe I last heard you were going to call it veteran-led. Is that the book you're writing?
That's correct. Veteran-led. And this is how to survive, thrive, and dominate as an organization. And I go back to the military, where when you become a new soldier or airman or marine, sailor, survival is key. And there are certain leadership skills we learn in the military that teach us how to survive, that also help us survive in the civilian world, in the business world. And then there is thrive, where we are functioning as a team. We see success through the eyes of a team. And then finally, domination, right? We are part of the greatest fighting force in the history of the world, the United States military. And how is it that this great institution came to be? And how can we build, how can we learn the lessons or take away from the lessons from being part of that organization? That huge organizational leadership lesson that we learned day in and day out. How can we become part of that? And I think, and I should say, how can we impart those lessons on our team? And how can we use that to really dominate our industry? Because look, to be the best fighting force in the world, it's not just about one piece. It's about huge concepts and executing in complexity. And how do you do that? And the military taught us that. And I think every person who survived their initial enlistment has the basic skills and tools to not only survive, thrive, but also dominate in just about any field because they've been indoctrinated with those key and core lessons that the military has taught us.
Yes, sir. And there's so much there to learn. And there's not just one way to do anything, but there's the attitude of leading your people encouraging them, put them in the right spot, give them the resources they need, being there for them. There's so much involved here, but the more you get involved and the more you see it, the more you pay attention to it, the more you can incorporate that into your leadership style and the more effective you'll be. There's lots of different styles, aren't there?
And that's the great thing. You get to see the different styles of leadership, but you learn the simple principles of leadership, right? We had core values in the military that we lived by, but we also just learned basic skills. I mean, think of all the common task training that we did where we learned how to train with a task, condition, and standard. You know, those were basic skills that we learned that translate today, right? If you want someone to do something right, you have to let them know the expectation and the standards. And so whether it's, you know, basic rifle marksmanship, teaching someone how to hit a target, right? And it's not that simple. We got to zero the weapon. We have to make sure that before we do that, the weapon is clean. We have to learn weapon safety. And we have all these standards that go into qualifying with our weapon, right? And if we can just back up and say, what did I learn from this? What did I really learn about how we can make hundreds of thousands of Americans proficient with weapons every year? Right? How do we do that? Kids that have never touched a firearm before, how can we do that? And it's really, I think it's those skills, right? It's going through CIF and getting a bunch of gear and learning which gear you need and which gear you don't need. And then it's field craft, learning how to make a flotation device out of your trousers, learning how to make the rucksack raft, learning how to make shelter out of your poncho, you know, learning how to use your poncho liner as a sleeping bag, right? And it's just learning to use your resources, learning to train, and learning what excellence looks like. It's important. And we forget that, I think, when we leave and we go to the corporate business world and we hear about money and big budgets and we get all confused about what's going on. The core decisions are actually really simple, right? You make decisions with integrity. You make decisions with the same core values, and you understand that you're never going to have all the resources you want. You're going to have to improvise, and you're going to have to rely on your team. I mean, these are basic things that we all know by the time we leave basic training or boot camp.
Oh, yes. Assuming we're all paying attention, which it wasn't always the case. But and too many times I've seen, no, that's I'm overstating that. On at least one occasion in my life, there was a leader I had who was always right. You couldn't approach him with anything because he knew everything. And that's beyond silly. The smartest thing in the world to do is to tell your subordinates. I told my subordinates, if you see something that you think I could be doing better, tell me. Now, in the right way, in the right time, but tell me. I may or may not do it, but I want to hear your thoughts. I trust you. I want your input. I'll still make the decision, but talk to me. Give me your insight. I sounded really smart at that point because I had the insight of all my good subordinates. That worked.
Well, that was one of the toughest lessons for me to learn. And that probably, you know, took me till I was a field grade officer to understand that feedback is a gift, right? As a young lieutenant or captain, you seem to think that you have the answers. But when you get feedback, right, it's important. Now, that being said, not all feedback is equal. I think when you get feedback from your high performers, you really need to take it to heart. And then there are people who the feedback is just complaining in disguise, right? So some people will give you feedback. There may be an ulterior motive, but generally speaking, I think your high performers always give you honest, actionable feedback. And so I couldn't agree more that as a leader, it takes time for us to understand that, you know, by the time our position is ratified in the hearts and minds of our men, we only got to that point because we listened to them.
Wow. John, if this is I'm sure it is, the thrust of your book, Veteran Led, this is a book that I think anybody who is or has goals of being a leader or even learning how to work with a leader needs to read. When's it going to be published?
Yeah, my hope is that no later than Veterans Day this year. I put together a bunch of, I had hundreds of pages. Danny, and I went back and looked at it and said, well, this is crap. But also I go through and I, you know, the different challenges that I have every day. I think as a leader, you continue to grow as a leader. And as I started this project, probably a couple of years ago, I think is when I first decided to do it. And as I put it together, my perspective has changed on a lot. And as I've had new leadership challenges, I've edited the book and I've added new chapters. And I've really thought about before it was going to be very simple, right? It was going to be more like I was going to call it What Sergeants Know. And just, you know, as a dumb lieutenant, what did I learn from my sergeants about how to execute? Because anybody can have a vision or a plan, But as you know, if you can't execute, that's all just a fantasy. And the people who make it happen in the military are the backbone of the military, the non-commissioned officers. So really, it was more of a lesson for young leaders. Hey, listen to your non-commissioned officers. Listen to those senior people in your organization who you may outrank, but who have the experience, right? It's the ones with the combat patches that tell you what you need to know that you really need to listen to, because those are the ones that are going to keep you alive. Even if you did get a degree that they don't have, or you have qualifications that they don't have, if they have that experience, right, you can get that experience. And I think the other part of it, Denny, is what I learned is if you don't have that experience as a leader in the business world, you can buy that experience. You can hire somebody who has been there, and it can save you decades of time learning and developing. I know you were an aide-de-camp to a general, right? Getting that experience, right? It is so valuable. And the thing is, if you're a young leader in business, you can go out and hire a coach. You can find a mentor. But as you look at developing your organization, you have to get people better than you on the team, people with more experience, people who are better at different things. And sometimes that means hiring them. Sometimes that means finding them outside of your business. But in the military, we always had mentors. There was always an education plan. There were always commanders out there who were willing to help. You go out to the civilian world, it's not like that.
And it should be, because that really works. A really good leader is always training his replacement. Even if that person doesn't replace you, that person might move to leadership in another place in your company or in another company. Good leaders are always developing leadership in their subordinates, right?
I think the saying goes that leaders develop other leaders, not followers. And I think you're dead on. And look, what I've noticed in developing other leaders, and this is one of the reasons why I wrote the book, was that other veterans are coming to me saying, hey, I see that you're having a lot of success at Barry Law. I'm in a different business, different industry, but here are some of my problems. And I said, look, these are the same problems. We're all technical experts in our own area, whether it's engineering, the law, automotive, craft, right? Whatever it is. Just because you have that expertise or that technician skill doesn't mean that your organization is going to be built much differently. You'll have different needs, but the leadership challenges are the same wherever you go. You need the best people. You need to make sure that they're trained. You need to make sure that they're taken care of. You need to build a future for them so that they stay. And you need to get the non-performers out, right? In the military, someone fails a PT test, we flag them, we counsel them, and, you know, if they don't make it, they're going to leave eventually. Now, in the civilian world, we don't have to suffer non-performance as long. But what I found is this is why we hire so many veterans. They get it, right? They understand that they're here to perform for part of a team, and that they need to be successful for the team to be successful. And that as leaders, we're here to help them succeed, and that feedback is a gift. And no, we're not going to make them do a bunch of push-ups unless they want to. But we are going to have honest conversations about performance.
Yes, sir. John, we're about out of time. Talk about exactly what Barry Law does and how listeners can get in touch with you.
So Barry Law represents veterans nationwide to help them appeal their VA disability claims. Veterans file claims, the VA looks at it, and they either rate them too low or they deny them outright. That's the time where we get into the fight. We want to help veterans get all of the benefits that they've earned. So if you've been denied your VA benefits, you've received a low rating, contact Barry Law. Our website is PTSDlawyers.com. I say again, PTSDlawyers.com. That's short for post-traumatic stress disorder lawyers. And that goes back to my father, who was a trial lawyer. This is how he started helping veterans, was that he was helping veterans with divorces and DUIs and assaults and other things that were manifesting from the PTSD. And so we wanted to help veterans get better. And when they'd come with a legal problem, we'd say, well, gee, this is going to be an expensive problem, but you already have the money. You just need to go get it from the VA, because your PTSD from your time in combat needs to be addressed. We need to get you counseling, but you also are entitled to compensation because you have this diagnosis. And unfortunately, for many veterans, they never got the diagnosis, or they were ashamed to go in and talk about it. And one of our missions at Barry Law is to say, look, it's okay, right? It's okay if you're hurting. You did what less than 1% of our country would do. You stood up and took the oath. We owe you. If we broke you, we owe you. So at Barry Law, we want to make sure that veterans get all the disability benefits that they earned.
Amen. John, thank you. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for your service to our nation in uniform. But thank you especially for what you're doing now for veterans and for our nation. I appreciate you as a friend.
Thanks, Danny. I appreciate your friendship as well. And I appreciate your show. Once again, we need to reach out to our heroes and be heroes to them.
Amen, brother. This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with Major General Paul Valley about our military's COVID crisis. Then General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom Troops. It's time for jumping jacks. Do 50 good ones, grab some protein, rehydrate with water, and finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.